Bortles takes. Play fake this time. Oh, they're going to get him. He got away from the blitz. Look at this. And now he's going to throw it down the field for Will Tofoa. And it's caught. It is caught by Will Tofoa all the way out to the 46-yard line by all rights. They had it dead to rights. Bortles spun away from it. And a 25-yard gain to his fullback. Empty backfield now for Blake Bortles. Two receivers to either side, plus a tight end. Straight drop, fires to the middle of the field. That's Hearns. He makes a catch in the Colts territory. Still on his feet. Allen Hearns is loose. Allen Hearns is inside the 20-yard line. He got away. Allen Hearns is going to score a touchdown for the Jaguars. He broke a few tackles and got it to the end zone. How do you like that?
He'll get the opportunity next week again. Now, like we said, I think it's time to start building Blake's body of work on the field.
Now live from Everbank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your hosts Mike Dempsey and Tony Smith.
Hey, welcome in everybody. Happy Monday to you. Brought to you by Wild West Guns and Gold. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you at Jaguars Today on 1010 XL 92.5 FM. Tony, I trust you had a spectacular weekend.
I had a pretty good weekend.
Did you?
It started pretty well on Friday.
Let me guess, you went to see Mad Max.
No. I went and saw Insidious on Friday with my mom. But after that, I
went to see some raging horror flick with my mom.
I did. She wanted to go.
All right.
U.S. got their first ever win in the Netherlands on Friday in come-from-behind fashion.
So they won the practice game?
4-3, they won the practice game after being down 3-1 with not long left in that contest. It was a lot of fun to watch.
Women's World Cup for the U.S. ladies start tonight, right?
Tonight at 7:30 against Australia.
Thug Solo tries to lead the team.
Thug Solo's still between the pipes.
Wow. Thug Solo, man. You don't want to mess with her, apparently. She can beat up 6'8", 260-pound dudes.
Apparently.
Apparently so. Allegedly.
She's not a little lady.
Yeah, but I read something that said she's 5'9", 150.
Is she? She looks a lot bigger
than that. Yeah, she looks like 6'3", 240.
They must all be a little tiny people.
I don't know, man. That must be, you're right, running around out there. Anyway, happy Monday to you here on 1010 XL 92.5 FM. Not the happiest weekend, Tony. We were all excited about our Vegas trip.
Oh, I know.
Coming up next month. And then I wake up Saturday morning, I'm like, what? Is this some kind of a cruel joke that's being played on yours truly and Fat Tony and the crew getting ready to go to Vegas for the National Fantasy Football Convention?
Nope.
The league put the kibosh on that. And my question with this is the timing of it. When do they become aware of this, what's been a pretty heavily promoted event that's fronted by Tony Romo? And everyone's saying Tony Romo put this thing together. My guess is that the people who are putting on,
right,
or were putting on the National Fantasy Football Convention went to, maybe Tony Romo was their first guy, maybe he was the fifth guy, but they went to a guy and they wanted to make him the face of it, the front man, and he's being paid for his services and for his recruiting ability to get other big name players to go there, but he's doing it for a fee. I don't think this is Tony Romo's brainchild, per se, but regardless, Tony Romo is going to be involved. We went over the guest list last Friday of who was supposed to be there among the players. This is a who's who of the National Football League, at least offensive skill position guys. Number of Jaguars were expected to attend, and it was going to be held in Las Vegas at the Sands Expo, which I guess is a property of the Golden Sands Casino. And the league announced, as is, I suppose, their right. I mean, look, they can't stop players from going there, but I guess they can punish them if their contracts prohibit them from taking place in any kind of promotional venture at a casino or a property owned by a casino. That's where it gets a little kind of hazy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, okay, so if they own an abandoned lot in Boise, Idaho, I guess you can't go there either.
Technically, no.
Right. I thought Jason Lockenfora was spot on, and others have since brought it up when he tweeted out over the weekend, what's the difference between the Saints training at a resort with a casino holding their training camp? Is that not promoting that resort? Why do you think they're doing it there? Why do you think the resort's having them to continue to get their name out? The Greenbrier is a pretty well-known resort, but with a casino, and that was allowed to stand. The feeling here is, well, that's because that was a team and the National Football League directly benefiting, whereas the NFL really had no direct benefit here,
right?
And the players were going to make the money.
Yeah, to me, this is about the fact that the NFL is not getting paid in this situation, that the players have found some way to go get themselves basically some money on the side, and that they happen to be doing it in a casino, so the NFL took notice of that and said, nope, we're not going to allow that kind of thing to happen.
They weren't doing it in a casino per se, but that's splitting hairs to some degree.
It really is. And look, for the National Football League, I get it. You know, we've been talking about this whole Deflategate thing, and the hearing's finally going to come up later this month to figure out what's going to happen with a guy like Tom Brady. And I've been saying the entire time, it's about the integrity of the game, right? So you can understand why professional sports leagues want to separate themselves from Vegas when they can, from casinos when they can, because you don't want to be directly associated with those kind of things. But pro sports in this country, and college sports in this country, and sports in general in this country, are driven by these kinds of things. They're driven by the gambling industry. Now, the gambling industry has changed the way that it looks over time. We found different ways to get away with it, right? I mean, we call fantasy football a game of skill.
It is a game of skill, right? Damn it, and that's a legally binding term.
Right.
Thank you very much.
It's a game of skill, but we're putting money on the line every year. And that's basically what's going on with this fantasy convention in Vegas.
You ever buy a lotto ticket or a scratch-off ticket with an NFL team logo on it?
And if you think that the NFL hasn't grown more popular, that its standing in American culture hasn't been elevated because of the love that this country has for fantasy football in the last 15 to 20 years, if you don't think that is in line with how the NFL has exploded compared to the other sports in this country, you're fooling yourself.
There's a strong correlation, right? It's not completely due to that, but there's certainly a good portion of that popularity is due to that, as far as that goes. So, I mean, this was a list of headliners that were set to take place. Tony Romo has been on national radio promoting this for 2 months, at least. This has been out there. And, you know, I don't know whose job it is to know that these kind of things are going on and why the timing all of a sudden showed up, apparently, you know, late on Friday on the late Friday news dump. Because it's not going to be something. Some people are just going to roll their eyes and say, who cares? It's fantasy football. Doesn't matter. What difference does it make? No impact to me one way or the other. And that's fine. Yeah. That's your prerogative. Think if you're a person who booked plane tickets to Vegas, booked a hotel, right? Bought tickets to this thing. You got to go through the whole reimbursement process.
Sure.
Good luck getting your plane fare reimbursed. I don't know how that whole thing works. Maybe you got the trip protection. I always decline trip protection, Tony, myself. But
you just be going to Vegas for a few days.
It was a pretty pricey event. We talked about it on Friday. This was like $250 a person was the bare bones thing to get in, and it didn't get you a whole lot. You know, there were much bigger packages. These guys who were putting this on, from the looks of things, stood to make a lot of money, and maybe so did the players who were going to participate in this whole thing. They've already announced that they'll do it for the first time now officially next summer in Los Angeles, but what's the draw of Los Angeles? I mean, I'm sure it's a great city. I'm sure there's plenty of nightlife. There's plenty of nightlife in a lot of places. What there isn't in a lot of places is the Vegas Strip, where people can go see the shows, get the gambling, do all those things as a sidebar to what they're going to Vegas for, the actual event itself. You can go to Los Angeles and do that. And now, if you're a person who's bought a ticket to this thing, and this group who's putting it on, who's doing it for the first time, they have no reputation whatsoever, see if they can pull this thing off, then the rug gets pulled out. Even if the blame falls at the feet of the National Football League, or how inclined are you going to be to buy a ticket, or at least not wait until the last second next year to find out if this thing even is going to happen again?
Right. I mean, it's interesting the correlations that we're seeing here between fantasy football and what's actually going on with some of these sports. I don't know. The draw for LA for me isn't nearly as much as it would be to go to a place like Las Vegas. I'm reading an article right now about ESPN. Disney Corp has invested $250 million now in DraftKings, and the valuation of that company is now at $1 billion. I know MLB and the MLB Network directly talks about DraftKings every day on all of their coverage every single day. I know the NBA has bought into FanDuel, correct? I mean,
the NBA, and I think it's DraftKings.
Is it DraftKings?
That the NBA, but they're the official fantasy provider of the NBA.
These companies are buying into these fantasy football spots. And by the way, when these fantasy football places decide that they're going to host something, they do it in Vegas.
Of course they do.
It's where they're doing these kind of things. The NFL, I get that they weren't getting paid in this situation, but needs to grow up a little bit. I mean, it's not like these guys, because they're at a casino in Vegas, that means that somehow that corrupts what's going on in this sport. It's just stupid.
Part of the responsibility has got to fall with the organizers of this event, though, too, right? I mean, you've got to have, it's for something this big, doesn't the question have to arise at some point? Maybe you just assume that because these players are not acting on behalf of their NFL teams directly and they're representing themselves as individuals, that there was no issue whatsoever. But somebody didn't do their due diligence on this. I put more of the blame on the National Football League, particularly for the timing of it, because it's going to screw a lot of people. And
they've known.
If they haven't known, then they're not doing their job.
You've been talking
either.
To Tony Romo how long about this event?
He came on our show a couple months ago and talked about it. So it's been out
but
there.
But then again, the commissioner wasn't thinking about what's going on with Tom Brady and his appeal, despite the fact that that's the most pressing issue in the National Football League, because he was getting ready for extra point talk at the owners' meeting.
Right, this is not like Roger Goodell has to weigh in on this. This is below Roger Goodell level stuff that somebody needed to have a red flag go up. By the way, Brandon Stokely is part of a group that's putting on another event. It's called the Fantasy Football Convention, which I've known about this one as well, and the guest list that includes like Mike Ditka. Like, really grouchy Mike Ditka? Do you really think Mike Ditka is going to have some salient fantasy football advice for you? That to me seems like an event where they slapped a couple of headline names on to get people interested. Oh, I can go get an autograph or a picture with the coach. I can't imagine, having interviewed Ditka a few times, that he's going to really give you a whole lot to hang your hat on. But this other thing was a chance for people to kind of rub elbows with some of the biggest stars in the National Football League. We do it every year at the Super Bowl, Tony, and it's kind of, it almost becomes passe because you see it every year and you forget how big of a deal it is for the average NFL fan to interact with these guys. And I mean, think of the photo ops and the autograph opportunities and to sit in panel discussions with some of these players. I mean, for some people out there, it'd be the highlight of their year. Right? I mean, from a sporting kind of vacation purpose. So the NFL throwing a big wet blanket on that whole thing. Jags on the field right now. OTA's week 3 going on. Johnny O will check in with us. John Osier from Jaguars.com. Get a report on what to expect this final week of OTA. Scheduled to be on the field 4 times this week. Nobody thinks that'll happen. Everybody thinks they'll blow off that Friday practice.
Yeah.
Or maybe it'll be a quick kind of walkthrough, get out there. Hey, guys, by the way, we're going to go bowling or whatever it is. We're going to go see Mad Max for the 17th.
Yeah!
No.
Go
speaking of
Mad Max,
that kind of ties in with our question of the day today.
No, it does not at all.
The Tom Bush Family of Dealerships Fan Feedback Spotlight asking you, what is the most overrated movie? I mean, who do you think is the most overrated player in the National Football League? It's a very simple question that requires a direct response from you at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL Fat Tony on Twitter. The Jaguars Today Facebook page open for business, of course. You can call in at 641-1010, and that also works as the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line, 641-1010, to share your thoughts with us today. A lot to get to today. Hopeful to catch up with a player coming off the practice field a little bit later on this morning. A bad offseason continues for a couple of franchises out there. We'll get into those stories as well, and just keep rolling along as we march ever closer to the beginning of the 2015 NFL season. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, live at Everbank on a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday here on 1010XL 92.5 FM. Just in time to celebrate our Monday sponsor, Wild West Guns and Gold, Johnny O. Fresh off the practice field, fresh as a daisy.
I'm here, baby.
Yes. How are you?
I'm here.
Weekend. That's it. You're here.
Yeah. Good weekend. Yeah. We had the obligatory graduation party for the son. And,
nice.
That's fine.
In some details, how many people were invited? How many friends?
It was a family deal, 20 to 25, and
all Osier family or extended family.
Yeah. In that range, my son's
nice.
Yeah, tennis coaches and things like that. So it was good. You know, I don't have many friends, so it's usually family. So
yeah.
That's
I don't have many either. I have to constantly bribe people to spend time with me.
Yeah, I mean that's really how it goes for
with free golf.
Free golf, pretty much.
Free golf's your thing. Instead of friends, you have free golf.
That's all I got.
Actually, free golf is better than friends.
I spent the day with JP Shadrick yesterday. We had a lovely time.
That'd be a good poll. What's better,
Slammer and Squire?
Golf or friends? For you.
For me?
Yeah.
Well, define friends. I mean, my wife is my best friend, so I'm not going to do without my wife, certainly.
Friends are people who hang out with you without free golf.
I don't have many, so I don't know.
I see you looking at Tony. He doesn't count either.
No, he doesn't. I'm just looking for, you know, it's kind of like one of those things where you look off out of the corner of your eye, you look up, and you're searching for the answer.
That's okay.
I looked at Tony. I always look to Tony when I need a tough question answered. Johnny O, will we get Allen Robinson working in team drills this week?
It sounds like it. It sounded from listening to Gus last week that he'll work in some. I doubt he'll be out there for the entirety of every team drill going 100% because there's no reason to do that yet. But he's been working individual, was looking good in that, and the next step is to work in teams. I'd expect a little bit of that today, but that hasn't happened yet. But just that's because they're not at that stage of practice yet, or so I would think, because I don't want to say anything about that for real.
Right. You don't want to be too particular about what's going on. But it'd be good. I think the big thing for him, just come out of this week without any setbacks.
Sure.
So you can hit minicamp mid-month and just hit the ground running, and let's put this behind us and move on from there.
Yeah, and even that, I don't know if you see him go every rep during minicamp at this point. You want to get back to where you come out of this phase feeling good and ready for training camp. And,
yeah.
You know, everything you hear is that he's taking the right approach all off season, and that he's a guy who's in the film room. I don't think what he does the next few weeks is going to have a dramatic effect on how he prepares during training camp. That's what's important for him at this point.
Right. I mean, to me, it's important what happens in the next few weeks, just that he comes out healthy.
Sure.
Right. And then, you know, so he can fully participate in training camp and have
Absolutely.
All that. And, you know, what's the word? Anything on Marquise Lee, just status quo?
I haven't heard, but they didn't talk about it very much last week, so I don't know about him. But I'd be a little surprised if he does very much, just because, again, you're talking a few non-contact practices over the next couple of weeks. But we'll find out more on that today.
All right, John Osher here with the senior writer for Jaguars.com here on 1010XL 92.5 FM. James Sample, second rookie to get hit with the injury bug out of this particular class. The way I understand it, it was, you know, like we see quite often, these players are taught to ingrain the mentality of going for the football,
yep.
right? Like the play's not over until that whistle blows, and until that whistle blows, you're ripping at that ball. You're trying to create yep. turnovers. You're trying to make those big plays. So they try to institute that mentality. Even in non-contact practice, you see guys grabbing for the ball. You see the running backs, if they're smart, holding it high and tight all the way through. Oftentimes, you'll see guys running it out the distance, 40 yards or whatever, even though nobody's really pursuing them, just to kind of instill that mentality of what you want to do when you get in the game. And so I guess it was one of these situations
yes.
at the end of a play, right? He's reaching for the ball, and I guess his arm got torqued in the wrong way.
Yep, and again, when 220 pounds meets 220 pounds and
pulling in opposite directions.
Yeah, the limb there.
Yeah.
Sometimes things like this, you know, I was getting emails all weekend, well, shouldn't the training staff do this, or shouldn't they do better supplements like this or whatever? These things.
If they only knew how to stretch them out better, John.
Yeah, and that's always the thing, and I get that because it's frustrating to see guys get hurt in non-contact situations, but it happens. So he's supposed to be back. From what you hear, not at the beginning of training camp, but they're optimistic that he'll be back by the time they get into preseason games. But for him to be out the first couple weeks of training camp is not ideal, because this is a rookie who you very much want to see how he can do against Sergio Brown in that competition. So I thought anyway that Sergio Brown would probably start the season. With him, meaning Sample, not being in the first couple of weeks, I'd be very surprised if Sergio Brown doesn't start.
Yeah, oh, I would agree with that. And I think now it's even more likely that he's able to hold on to that job for a little while.
Right.
If he could play at all, you know, halfway respectable football,
right.
Because like you said, with this young guy, you come in as the free safety or the last line of defense. And I think there's, as much as they believe he's got the physical tools, it's the mental
right.
processing of quick information. And without those reps, and he played a lot of strong safety at Louisville.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, trying to make the transition basically to a new position as a rookie coming in, we all know how overwhelming it could be for these guys. So this, you know, it's not going to ruin his entire rookie season, but it's
right.
a setback.
Right. And I think in the long run, I would think you'll see Sample either playing a starting role by the end of the season or in a three-person mix, meaning in the mix with Sergio Brown. I don't think Jonathan Cyprian's going to be off the field. But because Sergio Brown, I think, is going to be so valuable in special teams that there won't be as much of a hesitancy to make that switch, because Sergio Brown's a very good special teams player, and they really want to get better in that area. So the reluctance to pull him out of the lineup and just put him on special teams would not be as strong as if he wasn't a very, very good special teams player.
What are you hearing about Sergio? Any positive, negative,
just that,
anything?
Just that you know, he's what they expected. He's a good special teams player. Again, we talked about this so much. They needed to address that other safety spot. And once McCourty was gone, that premium, big-time, come in and you know he's the starter, you know what you got guy, wasn't there, and he wasn't there in the draft. So they've gone after Sergio Brown and James Sample in trying to figure out how to address that spot in the best way possible. I don't think anybody would think this is the ideal situation. It's hard right now to find the ideal free safety situation. So I think Sergio's a guy they're going to work there and try to find what he does well and try to find out what James Sample does well and see what you can get out of that position until, in the long run, you find what you think is the ideal guy there.
We've heard a lot of positive reviews of Blake Bortles over the last couple weeks. And again, understanding the context of what these practices are compared to how more important each step of the way is going to get the rest of the summer. Blake possibly will talk after practice today, should talk sometime in the next couple days.
Right.
So just kind of give us a peek into how things are going in his mind over the first couple weeks. But again, we've talked about this at times. We've had you in over the last couple weeks, but the difference you see in Blake compared to last year, what is it if you can quantify it?
Certainly a tighter spiral, and it's hard for me to quantify if the ball's really getting there quicker, but the receivers will tell you that it's getting there quicker. So it's hard to tell by the eye test. Oh, boy, that pass was a lot faster. But the receivers can see it when they're coming out of breaks, when they're getting the ball, and they're running the routes, and they can feel that a little bit. Alan Hearns has said a couple of times, yeah, it's getting there faster. There's definitely a difference. So I thought it was interesting that Gus Bradley sort of went out of his way at the end of last week. He hadn't been asked about Blake a whole lot. And in the press conference Thursday, he said, hey, I want to talk about Blake. They can see things where the fundamentals have improved. And they can see things where the things that Blake wanted to work on in the offseason are there, and they're showing up every day, and he looks better. And the caveat to all that is it doesn't really matter until October, because it's got to hold. It's got to hold under pressure. But all the things that you want to see and that you wanted to see, it appears that Blake feels good about it, and it appears that Olsen, Hackett, Blake are all on the same page. And Gus, who's not really in that meeting, is seeing it enough on the field to talk about it. So all the things you wanted to hear at OTAs, you're hearing on Blake Bortles.
Yeah, what you say, it doesn't really matter till October. I mean, meaning that no matter how good he looks now, it doesn't prove that he'll look good down the line.
Sure, but it's better than not looking good now.
Exactly. Right. Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, sure.
Right. Would you rather have him struggle and say, well, it doesn't really matter now?
And I only say that because, you know, everybody gets that this is a different game once the pads go on, once everything's real, and then once the bullets start flying in October. All this stuff now that we're talking about, who knows? But he wanted to work on certain fundamental things, and he wanted to keep ingraining that in over the course of time, meaning you start in February and March, and then you continue it now, and you continue that process, and every day is more about getting that muscle memory. I don't play golf, but you know, you sound like a great golfer.
Oh, I'm fantastic.
So, but you try to get your muscle memory to where you're not worrying about that stroke, and then if something goes wrong, you want to have ways that you can fix it when you're out there. And that's the process that they're going through with Blake to make sure, hey, okay, this went wrong today. Well, why did it go wrong? Okay, I need to put my elbow here. I need to do this, my footwork. So that's still the process, and that takes time. So that's why this work is valuable for him right now.
So slow down. I need to put my elbow here. I'm making notes because,
well, if you're making notes off that,
applicable
then, yeah,
well, to me later on.
Good luck to you.
I've got to believe part of the ball getting to these guys quicker is not just tighten up mechanics and delivery and all that and better you know, velocity on the ball resulting from that, but just anticipation, comfort level, right? Just, and I know it's a new offense,
right,
but just being around, you know, being the incumbent coming in, just having that comfort level and everything, I would hope has slowed down a tick for him since the
start. It was interesting. I don't know about that as much as listening to Greg Olsen speak last week about the speed with which the whole offense is sort of picking up this offense. And I talked to him after everybody sort of separated for a couple of minutes on Tuesday, I think Greg talked. And he said he's a little surprised at there's not more errors. And so he's impressed with the way that the offensive players are picking it up. He would have expected more mental errors right now. He's impressed that there aren't very many mental errors. It shows you that maybe they're a little bit ahead on that front of where they thought they would be. And he was especially impressed with Blake. Blake's got far more to learn and absorb, obviously. But he sounds like he's impressed with the way he's picking it up on what is essentially the third time through on the offense.
Yeah, you tell Greg Olsen, Jaguar fans like it when you run it up the middle, and then throw a screen pass on third down. And that's easy to pick
they
up.
They love that.
I think that's easy to pick up.
And what's tough for the coordinator is the fans act like they don't. They do that booing
right
thing.
Ooh, that's more like an ooh.
And I always, right. Ooh. I told Greg, they're kidding with the booing. Just go with that.
Go with what you do, my man. All right, Johnny O, what do you have coming up on the website?
After this practice, we hope to Blake Bortles, and I'll be doing the five takeaways. Try to get a little bit of an idea about where this team stands 2 weeks in on a couple of issues like the offensive line and Blake Bortles.
All right, Johnny O, John Osier, at John Osier on Twitter. And, of course, you can read him on the digital pages of Jaguars.com, the senior writer. Back to practice to you, for you, sir.
Looking forward. It's hot out there today, Mike.
Is it hot out there?
You should join us.
Yeah, it was a little breezy yesterday. It's kind of nice on the golf course, Johnny. I'd love to join you, but we do this radio program from the cozy confines, and there's no
it's
point in us.
It's much nicer in here.
I bet. I mean, we're going to be out there for minicamp.
Next Thursday.
Is it next Thursday? The 18th,
yes.
I believe, we'll be out there. Not a whole lot of reason to be out there when we can't talk about what we see. That's what we have you to
it
talk
is,
about. To not talk
it
about
is a
what
quandary.
You see.
It is a quandary. But, yeah. I can come in here and not cover the issues while you're talking about
much,
the
much
non-issues.
Easier on us to do it. Thank you, John. We appreciate it.
All right, guys. Thank you.
There he goes. John Osier here with you on Jaguars Today. Wild West Guns and Gold Money will continue in a moment. We'll take a look at two teams that are probably having the worst two off seasons you can imagine in the National Football League. We'll get to that coming up next here on 1010XL 92.5 FM. Monday is brought to you by our friends at Wild West Guns and Gold. Jaguars Today here on 1010XL 92.5 FM. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you live at Everbank Field. Thanks to Johnny O for stopping by. It has not been a bad offseason, I think, for the Jacksonville Jaguars. I think it's been mostly a very good one, a very positive one, with the big exception being the injury to Dante Fowler Jr. Injuries are going to happen in the National Football League, Tony. Maybe not one as significant as that to every team in the offseason, but throughout the course of the season,
sure,
you're going to see teams lose big-time players, bigger than Dante Fowler. Ryan Clady, for instance, of the Denver Broncos, their left tackle for a number of years, lost likely for the season, it appears, as well. So it happens around the National Football League. So the Jags aren't any worse off than anybody else, but they had what we feel is a good offseason of player procurement with free agency, targeting their needs, the draft. As Dave Caldwell said, they had that checklist of 10 needs that they felt they had to fill to varying degrees. Some of that's backup stuff, but some of it, like, hey, we need an impact pass-catching tight end. We need a feature running back, those kind of things. Check, check, check. So
right.
They checked off everything on the list. So they feel like they've had a good offseason. But two teams not having particularly good offseason. We'll start with the New England Patriots, where you could say, you know what, do they really care all that much? They're the defending Super Bowl champs, right? It's really been more of a bad two-year period for New England with the Aaron Hernandez specter hanging over the franchise. And I know some people feel that that doesn't reflect necessarily negatively on the Patriots, but you're still associated with that story every time it comes up.
Yeah.
And you'll be associated with it even more. His first trial date is going to come up, I think, is it September? Did I read for the new double murder trial? Was it December?
It's jury selection starts in December.
Jury
I think the
selection.
Trial is in January.
Okay, so it'll start in January. So, yeah. But we'll hear more, you know, right towards the end of the football season. Again, about this story, it'll come up. Obviously, you had the whole Deflategate thing, and while you may think the story itself is a silly one, its impact on the legacy of the franchise, the owner, the quarterback, to some degree, Belichick, although he seems to have done a pretty good job maneuvering to wash his hands of this situation, you know, kind of, you could, in some circles, putting a black mark on that franchise. Here's the latest. It's not necessarily earth-shattering, but Brandon Spikes, former Patriot, re-signs with the team after some time in Buffalo, and over the course of the weekend, calls OnStar as he's driving around, says, hey, I hit a deer, and then leaves his car by the side of the road. There's damage to the front end. There's no deer to be found anywhere nearby, apparently. Along about the same time, on that same stretch, I believe it was up in Massachusetts. I'm sure they're going through OTAs up there as well. Same stretch of road, Tony. Another car with three people says they were struck from behind. Couldn't see who hit them. I don't know how, but maybe just they were struck, jarred, and who knows, that whoever hit them could have veered off into the next road and whatever the case. But
yeah,
hit and run, basically. So you put two and two together, and you think, did Brandon Spikes rear-end somebody? And speculating here, maybe he was drinking, right? Because why else would you leave your car and abandon your car and try to pass it off as, hey, I hit a deer? Well, the Patriots aren't messing around anymore. They're just like, you know what? See you later, Brandon.
Yeah, I think it was $25,000 is what it's going to cost them in the end. For this whole thing.
For Brandon Spikes?
Yeah. I think that's the money that he got up front.
$25,000.
Yeah, guaranteed.
That's better than sharp stick in the eye.
Well, it's
for
not,
basically no work.
It's not nothing, but in NFL terms,
it's not much.
Yeah.
It's not much. Will he play again in the National Football League? He might. I mean, he's not a great player anyway. He's strictly just a first and second down player as it is, and an average one at that, it appears, based on the amount of interest that was shown in him around the league.
Who knows? I mean, he may play football again, but he is what he is at this point, and all the off-field stuff is catching up with him pretty quickly. If the New England Patriots are saying, nope, we've had enough.
Patriots got to have a quick trigger finger right now on that kind of stuff, though, don't they? I mean, why go down that road again? I heard Dan and Jeff talking about this, the stretch of Florida football from 2006 to 2008. Dan suggested they do a documentary entitled Heaven and Hell. It's not a bad idea. Heaven, obviously, alluding to the connection, the religious devotion that Tim Tebow had shown, and hell being pretty much everybody else on that roster, right? I mean, Ray McDonald, you see the stories about him. They claim he's a serial domestic abuser, at least some have. And obviously Hernandez, Spikes, Percy Harvin's had his issues. A bunch of them have had their issues as far as that goes.
Yeah.
But so the Patriots, and the Patriots have gone down that road with a lot of those guys off that team, as a matter of fact. But so Spikes released by the Patriots. The other team having a hell of an offseason is the San Francisco 49ers. Anthony Davis announces, I think it was Friday, that he is retiring, maybe I'll come back in a little while. You're talking about a starting tackle for this football team. Now it's post-draft, post the majority of free agency. What's out there, you know, to go sign
right
to try to replace this guy? Tony, on the heels of Patrick Willis retiring this offseason, and that was unexpected, Chris Borland retiring this offseason, which was completely shocking, considering they drafted him in the third round last year, and he had an outstanding rookie season. And then, on top of that, Justin Smith, who may have been their best defensive lineman, still retiring. That one not as unexpected. They were hopeful he would come back, but they
right.
were like 34 years old, so it wasn't shocking, but that's four key guys from your football team that just up and left. Not to mention, you lose Mike Iapati. You lose him in the division in free agency to the Arizona Cardinals, right? You lose Frank Gore, although you feel like you've got guys on the roster to replace him with Carlos Hyde coming up. You sign Reggie Bush. So it's not like it was a complete one-way street, but, you know, Frank Gore's been the heart and soul of that offense for a long time. Greg Roman, off to coordinate the Buffalo Bills.
Mm-hmm.
May not be a bad thing. That's kind of their choice, right? But Harbaugh, who knows if that, how much of that was their choice, how much of that was Harbaugh's choice. So head coach out the door, you lose your coordinators. You've lost a lot of key guys on that football team. Michael Crabtree, another guy. You know, you're still wondering, is Navarro Bowman going to be the player he was pre-injury a couple of years ago? That's a team, Tony, that when they were playing for the Super Bowl against Baltimore and Kaepernick played so brilliantly, particularly in the second half of that game, you thought, man, they're poised to go toe-to-toe with Seattle for the next half decade, right, as being the dominant team, if not in the NFL, at least in the NFC, certainly in the NFC West. And right now, you're going to see every pundit pick San Francisco to finish dead last right now in their division.
And you probably should.
Yeah, I'm not arguing that.
I can't remember a team having this kind of offseason. I can't remember one team having this kind of offseason where you have guys going into the potential primes of their careers that are saying, nope, I don't want to play football anymore. You have a guy like Patrick Willis, who's a Hall of Famer, stepping away from the game. You lose your head coach, both coordinators, all of this turnover. You're basically making a defensive line, a career defensive line coach, your head coach, and it feels like everybody wants out. Like, I've never seen anything like this in the National Football League.
But it's one thing for Justin Smith to retire. I mean, Smith played forever, right? He's had injuries.
Doing it a long enough time that if he says, I don't want to do this anymore with all the other changes we've had, I don't want to deal with this.
Not shocking.
Right.
Not shocking. And, I mean, you're hoping to squeeze one more year out of that at most. Patrick Willis, a different story, but still, at least he's played in the league for a long time now. And you could say, wow, maybe there's a cumulative effect. When you got two guys in their early to mid-20s, in Borland and Anthony Davis, who just decided basically to give up football rather than play for your franchise. I don't know how directly it's related to that, because it seems like Borland's just happy to walk away from the game, period. Anthony Davis indicates he may come back. Pro Football Talk made a good point. And give kudos to Anthony Davis, I suppose, for being above board about this. He could have shown up and just slacked off, right? And collected his $4 million this
certainly
year.
Certainly could have, yeah.
And then just walked away. But instead, he owes the team money because of unearned signing bonus money. And he's already announced that he's going to pay that back. Now, if he elects to come out of retirement, there may be a fight over that. Does he get that back? Think about the hassle, Tony. Forget about which, by the way, Tony and I had not booked our tickets yet. We're literally going to book them today for the fantasy convention that got canceled in Vegas. Imagine what a hassle it would be. Like, oh my gosh, we had all the arrangements made, now we got to cancel everything. Imagine you got to pay back this money, and then you got to work it out with the IRS. Well, I've been taxed on this,
mm-hmm.
and now I'm paying it back. Now what am I going to do? Then you come back out of retirement, say a year later, and you fight to have that bonus money repaid, and you got to go through the whole process in reverse.
Right.
Again. I don't want to deal with any of that kind of stuff.
No, it's crazy. I've never seen anything like it in the NFL. And for a guy 25 years old that was going to get that kind of money to say, I'm retiring, and then to clarify that with, well, I think I may be away for a year or two, just want to let my brain and body heal.
Right.
I mean, you have to ask the question, with everything going on in San Francisco, do the players want to play for Jim Tomsula? Like, with everything that is going on, because I've never seen anything like this in the National Football League, do the players want to play for this guy? And having been around him for part of an offseason where they're trying to get a feel for what he's going to be as a head coach, are a lot of guys saying, nope. Look, there's a lot of money that a lot of these guys are leaving out there, so you'd have to feel really strongly about it to make that kind of decision. But for it all to be happening this way in one place, it's just really odd.
I think it's an interesting cautionary tale when you talk about the way the Jags are trying to build it. They're trying to build a young nucleus, right, that can all kind of come up together as much as possible, sprinkle in some vets. But basically, they're trying to build a sustainable contender. And it can be done. We've seen teams sustain contention over long periods of time, primarily when they have the right quarterback in place. Mm-hmm. But they feel like they hope that they've drafted the right guy and that he will turn out to be one of those type players. But San Fran, Tony, just a few years ago, again, they're sitting there in the Super Bowl. they got this quarterback who's just basically fresh off the turnip truck. I mean, he's just very little starting experience, raw talent, only going to get better. He's got these weapons to work with. They've got this the best offensive line in football, right? They've got all these things back to a very strong defense, even though that game was kind of a shootout as it played out in the Super Bowl. And, you know, the ability to make big-time plays. I mean, they're knocking on the door. They're throwing in the end zone four times to win the damn Super Bowl.
Right.
And they think it'll sustain for a long time. And then all of a sudden, here we are a couple years later, and it's all the bottom's falling out completely.
Well, the voices that you would have considered the leaders in that locker room going into last season, the 2014 football season, would have been guys like Frank Gore, Patrick Willis, and Harbaugh. Right? They're gone. They're all gone. They completely lost the leadership on that football team. I think maybe part of it speaks to how the teammates feel about a guy like Colin Kaepernick. Maybe it talks about how they feel about Jim Tomsula being named the new coach after losing both coordinators and their head coach. But that's a lot to have to happen and deal with in one offseason for an NFL team. They're going to be picked last in the division, and with good reason. Because last year it felt like they were on the brink of collapse because of the way Harbaugh runs that ship, that there were a lot of players that were kind of, I don't know about this anymore. And they wound up 8-8, not making the playoffs, and fired Harbaugh. Now everything is gone, basically, in San Francisco, with the exception of Colin Kaepernick.
4-12 wouldn't shock you right now, would it?
No.
For that football team. Duval Doom tweets, do you think the 49ers let Dan Scuda go if they know Patrick Willis and Chris Borland are going to be gone? I think not, says Doom. Possibility, right?
Certainly,
I mean, if they knew, I mean, how can you know? The guy certainly didn't know Chris Borland was going to up and just disappear like that. Patrick Willis, I don't know if they had any inkling on that, but I think that took him by surprise as well. Maybe they don't. Maybe they say, hey, you know what? Sands are shifting too rapidly. Let's bring this guy back who knows the system, and we can use him in some multiple ways. So it's quite possible that's the case, that they wouldn't have brought him back, or they would have at least efforted to bring him back had they known those guys weren't going to be around. All right, coming up, we got this state in football history and the Honda drive around the NFL. Plenty of time for you to weigh in as well at 641-1010, both on the phones and the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line. Tweet the show at MD_1010XL and at 1010XL Fat Tony. The question of the day asking you, who is the most overrated player currently in the National Football League? Share your thoughts with us on that on via any of those means of communications, including the Jaguars Today Facebook page. We'll be back in a moment on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
And now, this date in football history.
All right, this date in football history brought to you this week by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry. Tony, let me ask you. You've heard about Super Bowl III, I take it, right? Joe Namath and the Guarantee?
Of course, yeah.
Why do we consider that the most significant game? Many consider it the most significant game in league history.
Well, it was the first time the AFL team beat the NFL team.
This is correct. And you also hear the term that it forced the merger, right?
Yeah.
Between the two leagues. Well, Tony, I'm here to tell you that in 1966, the NFL and the AFL announced plans to become the NFC and the AFC in 1970. So it was already in the works for 4 or 5 years. It was already announced that it was going to happen.
It's the legend of Namath.
Isn't it crazy, though? I mean, people tell that story and they say, Joe Namath beating the Colts forced the merger, forced the NFL to the table. No, maybe it made it more sellable.
Legitimized it, maybe.
Legitimized it, all these different things. But the merger was happening one way or another. I find that fascinating. And it just goes to show you, you can't believe everything you hear, no matter how oft-repeated it is. Kind of interesting to me. So it happened in 1966, the two leagues announcing that they would ultimately become the NFC and the AFC a few years later. Born on this date in 1917, Tony, maybe the guy who had the best host-playing career success of any player who's ever played in the National Football League. That would be Byron White, otherwise known as Whizzer White, who was born on June 8th, 1917, in Fort Collins, Colorado. Went on to star with the Colorado Buffaloes, played only 3 years in the National Football League, Tony, but led the league in rushing twice in that time, then went off to join the Navy, I believe it was, and when he came out of the military in World War II, opted to go to law school, where eventually he would find success as a Supreme Court justice, appointed in his mid-40s by President Kennedy back in the 1960s. So Byron White then passing away at the age of 84 in 2002. We did this once on the program a few years ago. Who had the best post-playing career, most successful life after their playing career. And somebody mentioned Byron White, and I, at the time, remember thinking, I don't know if I could top that. Mm-hmm. You know, Supreme Court Justice, pretty good follow-up there. Born on this date in 1939, Herb Adderley, Hall of Fame defensive back, primarily with the Green Bay Packers, also spent a few years with the Dallas Cowboys, 5 Pro Bowls, 4 first-team All-Pro mentions, and elected to the Pro Football Hall of Fame in 1980. Also born on this date in 1970 would be Troy Vincent, longtime NFL cornerback, currently the NFL Executive Vice President of Football Operations. He's the one who selected a 4-game suspension for Tom Brady,
yep,
by the way, former president of the National Football League Players Association. So he probably is viewed by some players as the ultimate turncoat. Was the head of the Players Association for about 4 years, and then now he is one of Roger Goodell's hatchet men, so to speak, some would say. This date in football history brought to you by Dr. McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry, located on Gate Parkway. If you need cosmetic work done or you're in the market for a family dentist, call 620-9225. Dr. McCall is a certified Invisalign provider, and you can get that custom fit, stop snoring, Somnomed, SnoreGuard as well. And all of your loved ones will thank you. Visit jamesjmccall.com for a complete list of comprehensive care services. That is this date in football history.
Now, the Honda Drive Around the NFL, brought to you by your Jacksonville area Honda dealers.
Well, the Chicago Bears have signed free agent cornerback Tracy Porter to a 1-year deal. He had been sitting on the street. You may remember he's the guy who picked off Peyton Manning for the New Orleans Saints in the Super Bowl to clinch that Super Bowl victory. Former Stanford kicker Derek Belch has recently developed a system using drones and virtual reality headsets that allows coaches to have a better idea of what players are looking at on the field. Has already been in use at Stanford, as well as Arkansas, Auburn, Clemson, and Vanderbilt with football. So if it only started being used last season, there could be questions about how effective that technology might be, considering that list of schools. But the Dallas Cowboys have become the first team in the NFL to use that 3D technology at their own practices, according to ESPN Cowboys reporter Todd Archer. Cowboys head coach Jason Garrett had this to say about it, quote, "It's interesting because it gives you the chance from behind to see all 11 guys on offense and all 11 guys on defense, but from a closer angle, you can see where they have their feet, where they have their eyes. I think that's important. You can look at that and coach them better being that much closer to the action." So the technology certainly is interesting. How effective it may be as a teaching tool, still to be seen. But the idea of a coach being able to go in and say, this is what my quarterback looked at first, that's not where I want him looking on these particular plays, could be interesting.
Quarterbacks probably hate it.
Probably do.
Get out of my eyeballs. Stop it. You know what's coming next after that? Sponsored drones. You know it's coming.
Oh, it'll,
right?
Certainly, yeah.
Little drones will be carrying little streamers behind them.
Considering you know, you can wear the ads at like camp and stuff like that. These
exactly.
will be in practices, so yeah.
Practice drones. Practice sponsored practice drones. Didn't Tracy Porter also, is he also the one who picked off Brett Favre in that playoff game?
I think he was, yeah.
Right? So you got Manning and then you got Favre when, refresh my memory of the circumstances. Minnesota, what do they need? Just a field goal to win that game?
Yeah, it was. I can't remember if that game was in overtime, too, but I remember.
I think it might have been.
It was one of those where Favre was rolling right and threw back against his body to his left, that typical Favre thing, and Tracy Porter picked it off. That was the 09 NFC Championship game, I want to say.
With Minnesota?
Yeah.
I don't think it was that long ago, was it?
I think it was.
Was it Favre? Was that long ago?
Maybe it was more
2010.
Okay. Just a year different.
Yeah.
15 seconds left on the clock there for the interception by Favre.
Nice job, Brett. Hey, Brett's got plenty of money. He's got a Super Bowl ring.
Yeah. And that was really the game where a lot of people were pointing to with the bounty gate because of the way that
they
were going after Brett Favre.
Remember
was
the leg,
game?
The purple leg bruising?
Yep.
That we saw come out of that. So Tracy Porter's been in the midst of couple of the biggest plays. I mean, and noted film junkie Peyton Manning. I mean, probably by reputation. I'm not saying by fact. I would assume there are, you know, some of the top level quarterbacks are all grinding away, and maybe it's not publicized as much, but
right.
as much a film junkie by reputation as anyone there's ever been, right?
Yeah.
And Tracy Porter credited that play with the film work, right? That they had seen the look, he knew exactly where he was going with the football on that. And
yeah, almost to his detriment, Peyton Manning watches too much film.
Right.
Like, and that's kind of what Porter was saying.
Like we're going to give you a look, and we know what you're going to do to us based on that look, and therefore we can react to that.
Yeah, which is crazy. That a guy watches enough
film.
That's
like playing three-dimensional chess on Star Trek.
It really is.
Geek moment.
Yeah. For Peyton Manning, obviously, that's one of those moments I'm sure he wishes he could have back in his career, one of many. But two Super Bowl rings would sound a whole heck of a lot better than one.
Oh, right? I mean, seriously, one, it's like, okay, you won one, but that's a fluke because Mark Rippon won one. You know, I mean, that's not fair, but that's how it gets done.
It's just the way it is.
Right, it's the way, fair or not, it's the way it is. That's probably the play he wants back more than any other.
Considering everything else that the conversation between Peyton and Eli is going to be for the rest of their lives, Peyton is clearly the better quarterback than Eli Manning has been for the entirety of his career. But unless he gets another one, Eli will always have that second ring as a trump card over his older brother.
Yeah. Yeah, he will have that, and I'm sure there is some of that sibling good nature rivalry that goes on back and forth. That's got to be the single play he wants back the most, though, right? Got to be.
The Porter interception.
Got to be. I mean, his entire career, it's got to be the play. You get that back, and who knows, maybe you're the two-time Super Bowl champs, and like you said, that's a different feeling, a different stratosphere in that circumstance. And look, he was a part of the reason why they lost, because he did throw that pick six, but what are you going to do? All right, apparently Peyton Manning's going to settle for one Super Bowl championship, unless you think the Denver Broncos are going to win it this year. We'll get into that. I got some texts coming in and that kind of relate to that lightly on the question of the day, asking you who is the most overrated player currently in the National Football League. We'll get to some of those responses on the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line. Excuse me. Texter sending this one about the 49ers issues. Isn't it directly related to their weirdo of a new head coach? I've only seen a couple of interviews with that guy, but he seems like a nutcase. Love the show. Well, thank you. We love you. Quite possibly.
He does seem crazy.
He does, right. It seems like they just said, you know what? We're going to punt on it this year, right? You know, let's have a guy who knows the system. Let's try to hold things together internally.
I would say that it seems like your whole roster has decided to punt too.
Apparently so. Except for Andy Lee, he's going to punt for another team.
Right. And I wonder if Andy Lee said trade me. Like,
isn't Andy Lee one of the best punters in the National Football League?
I know he's a 4-time Pro Bowler, blah, 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 blah.
And so they spent a 5th-round pick on a punter, which is not as bad as a 3rd-round pick on a punter. But a 5th-round pick when you already have a really good punter.
I don't know.
It's kind of strange. But now the 49ers, I don't know what their circumstance was this year, but the last few years, they've done a nice job, several of those years, of stockpiling picks where they've had a bunch. So if you got, you know, 10, 12, you figure your team like the 49ers, typically, you're not going to have 12 rookies make the team.
Probably not, no.
If you know that your punter's going to make the team, or your drafting's got to replace him, and they ended up, I think, getting a 7th-round pick for Andy Lee.
Right. You might have this year when 7 or 8 of your guys that could be starters say, I'm done.
Right. So you could get a proven 4-time Pro Bowl punter for a 7th-round pick, or he says leaving it unsaid. Maybe he should leave it unsaid. You can get one in the 3rd round who's not proven to be a 4-time Pro Bowler. So
not
there
yet.
You have it. Not yet, anyway. First one's coming this year with a bullet. 6-4-1-10-10. We'll come back on a Wild West Guns of Gold Monday. Doors wide open for you. We'll get to the text line, Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line. Weigh in if you'd like, and tell us who you think is the most overrated player in the National Football League. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you on 1010XL 92.5 FM. We continue along. Jaguars Today, Monday, is brought to you by Wild West Guns and Gold. Big deal going on for Father's Day at Wild West, giving you great reasons to remember your dad this Father's Day. You get a free $20 gift card with any $200 gift card purchase, so keep dad in mind there. Store-wide sales at Wild West Guns and Gold that will have prices basically too low to advertise due to manufacturers' price protection policies. Victor and his staff, you're going to love those guys. They'll give you this guarantee. They will meet or beat any advertised retail price on all of your firearm needs. Nothing but the best when you deal with Wild West Guns and Gold. The best price, service, and the most knowledgeable staff. Remember your dad this Father's Day by visiting Wild West Guns and Gold. Check them out online at guns4jax.com, guns the number 4, JAX, or stop in at 1233 South Lane Avenue here in Jacksonville. Call 693 07 77 for Wild West Guns and Gold, our Monday sponsor here of Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. Question of the day brought to you by the Tom Bush family of dealerships, asking you, who's the most overrated player in the National Football League? Perennially, my answer was Troy Polamalu.
Mm-hmm.
And I truly believe that. I think there have been a lot of overrated safeties. I thought John Lynch was overrated. Good players, don't get me wrong.
Yeah, I was going to ask you how you're going to answer this question, considering I know at one point in time, Brian Urlacher was the guy you would have pointed to with this. And I think when he got into the middle of his career, everyone kind of figured out that, no, he's probably not overrated. Urlacher's really good. Polamalu, I know, was the guy at the top of that list for you for a long
time. Very good player, but I truly think because of the way he looked and the style and, you know, the hair and all of it played into the mystique of Troy Polamalu. Troy Polamalu was a gambler, found himself out of position as much as he was making spectacular plays. And, you know, the net was probably a positive, certainly was a positive for all the accolades. I don't think you get all that many accolades without being a good player. But I always thought Troy Polamalu wasn't as good as he was cracked up to be, and certainly not in Ed Reed's category. And, you know, so that was the top guy on my list. Does anyone think Dwayne Bowe is any good, Tony? Because if anyone, including his mom, thinks he's any good, that's too many people thinking Dwayne Bowe is any good.
Dwayne Bowe.
He's just not very good. He's not none of it. From my vantage point, he doesn't have a lot of, shall we say, desire to make the tough plays.
Oh.
Right? To
the alligator arms.
There's a lot of the alligator arms going on with him. That I've seen, anyway, with my eyes. So
I've never understood the alligator arms. It's the NFL. You're probably going to get hit anyway.
Yeah, but you know, it's a natural instinct.
The ball.
Don't you get like you reach out and your ribs are just there to get blasted, right? And
yeah.
You know, you pull them in, little T-Rex arms.
You would think that, you know, the first time that you kind of pull your arms back in and you still get blasted.
I guess, like, but if you have your arms sucked against your ribs, maybe you don't get blasted as hard.
I guess.
I don't know.
Well, he kept getting paid.
Yeah, that's the idea anyway.
Yeah.
So, anyhow, if you'd like to weigh in on that, there's a variety of ways to do it. Who's the most overrated? Got this one. This is quite the novella that we got on the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line, 641-1010, the number there. It says, Andrew Luck's the most overrated player in the NFL. The talking heads revere him like he's a Brett Favre, Tom Brady, or Peyton Manning. I think the reverence is way too premature. His stats are great, and he has a great highlight reel. Okay, well, those are two pretty big positives.
Sure.
But I haven't seen anything special that screams Hall of Famer. You mean other than the great stats and the highlights? Where is the signature playoff win? What even hints that win is coming? I don't know. Maybe where they went into Mile High or Invesco Field at Mile High and beat the Broncos last year.
28-point comeback against Kansas City.
I would those suggest maybe.
They were down 4 touchdowns at halftime in a playoff game.
He didn't give up those scores that they were down by. Good to great quarterback, sure. Good. So he acknowledges he may even be a great quarterback. Good to great quarterback, sure. One of the greatest. One of the greatest quarterbacks of all time. I don't see it. He's feasting off a bad division, and he shrinks in front of real competition. I think he's very overrated. Well, I mean, that's your prerogative, okay? It's in the eye of the beholder on this. Some people think Peyton Manning is way overrated. Many people probably think Peyton Manning's way overrated. Others think he's probably the greatest quarterback that's ever played the game of football and that it's very difficult to win championships.
You can make pretty compelling arguments for both sides of that.
You can. But if you compare Andrew Luck to Peyton Manning, right, and the trajectory that their careers are on. Andrew Luck, first 3 years in the league, 11 wins, 11 wins, 11 wins in the regular season. Peyton Manning struggled mightily as a rookie. 3-13, had the 26 touchdowns to go with 28 interceptions as that went. Andrew Luck threw 40 touchdowns last year already in his third year in the league.
Yes, he did.
Granted, the numbers are getting bigger as we go along. If you don't see anything to indicate that Andrew Luck can be an all-time great, I don't know if we're watching the same
guy.
But
you're talking about, I mean, I'm looking at his stats now. You're talking about a guy with basically 13,000 yards in his first 3 years, 86 touchdowns, 43 picks, 7.1 yards and a 10.
How many touchdowns?
86.
86.
And 43.
2-1,
mm-hmm.
Which is what you strive for, at least 2-1.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You have those quarterbacks that have those exceptional seasons, certainly, where they throw a bunch of picks or a bunch of touchdowns and, you know, half dozen picks or less, but You take 2-1, throwing as much as he's had to with a porous defense at times, you know, kind of the offense on his shoulders, and that doesn't. Is that all passing touchdowns, or is that just total?
That was just passing touchdowns.
Passing. He throws in another half dozen or five or so on the ground.
I bet he's probably got around 10 rushing touchdowns.
I would think so, something like that. Look, and that's your prerogative if you think he's overhyped. And that's what we're asking, who's the most overrated?
Well, it's kind of like it's the same thing with Phillip Rivers, right, where Andrew Luck feels like one of those guys. I think there are – if you watch Andrew Luck play enough – there's going to be times in games where you're like, this guy's nothing special. There's nothing special. That arm isn't super strong or anything like that, but they just keep making plays, and they keep putting their team in positions to win. And I'm telling you, go look at that Indianapolis roster and what he's had to deal with. I know the NBA Finals are going on right now, and people keep talking about LeBron carrying that Cleveland team. And in basketball, it's a little bit different than it is in football because it's one of five guys instead of one of 22. But Andrew Luck is carrying that Indianapolis team to any success that they're having, and he's doing it with not a ton of help. I mean, have they had a decent running back? Is the best running back they've had Ahmad Bradshaw, and that was the guy who gave him more really as a pass catcher than it was as a runner
he
coming out of the backfield?
He was playing with Dan Heron, who is basically an NFL afterthought in the playoffs last year.
Right. I mean, he's carrying that Colts team to 11 wins a year into the AFC Championship game last year. I don't think that he's overrated. I can understand why people look at him and think that he probably is, because he's been anointed since before he got into the league as this guy.
He's lived up to, to me, in my eyes, as much of the hype as you could possibly live up to.
Yeah.
Though, I mean,
he's not overrated to me.
Right, without winning Super Bowls already.
Yeah.
And, I don't think he's overrated at all. Somebody brought up Wes Welker on the Boston Restaurant and Sports Bar text line. They said, what has he done? He's produced nothing except when he's been with great quarterbacks, always played with amazing QBs, produced nothing when he was with the Dolphins or the Chargers. Well, if you look at his career trajectory, his first year he really didn't play. He's with San Diego and Miami.
He was pretty good with Miami.
He went second year with Miami, he had 29 catches for 434 yards. The next year he had 67 catches for 687 yards, and that's when in a game against New England he caught the eye of Bill Belichick, who opted to trade for him. At that point in time, I think they gave up a second round pick.
Was that the 1-15 year for Miami?
It's possible.
Where their one win was New England?
I don't know. 2006 Miami Dolphins. I'd have to. I guess you know what. I bet if I click on the. No, they were 6-10 that year. 6-10 in 2006. Look, you could certainly argue that. I don't know how many people though. When you talk about overrated. If you're just looking at the numbers, you're saying he's not as good a player as his numbers, fine. I don't know how many people suggest Wes Welker's among the best receivers in the National Football League.
Not right now.
Right, or really ever. I mean he put up big numbers.
He fit the role that he was asked to do about as well as you possibly could in New England and that first year and a half in Denver.
And that's fine. And by the way, this is really about personal preference and point of view.
Sure.
So there's no, there's no wrong answer here. If you feel that person's overrated, it's through your eyes. I just have a hard time agreeing with you on Andrew Luck. I could buy Welker before I could buy Andrew Luck and being in the overrated category. Let's get to the phones and welcoming Gary next up here on Jaguars Today. Good morning, Gary. How are you?
Good morning, gentlemen. How are you?
What's up?
Overrated guy, he's hyped, but I never see the guy make a play when I watch him. Jason Pierre-Paul of the New York Giants.
Tony, weigh in on your guy, Jason Pierre-Paul.
It's a defensive end. He's going to flash, every now and then. So you're not always going to see him. I think that he's a really good player. I don't know where you're rating him to feel like he's overrated, but I think he's a really good player.
He does get mentioned, I would say, with the most, at least athletically gifted.
That he is.
Talented, explosive kind of defensive ends. Not necessarily the best. Obviously, you got Watt at the top. You got guys like Robert Quinn. And you can talk about the pass rush position. Outside linebackers like Justin Houston, consider him what you want. But
sure.
They play the same role for their football team.
And he's a hit or miss guy. I mean, Pierre-Paul will have a really good year and then have a really kind of mediocre year, and then another. He had a good season last year for the Giants, and he'll probably follow it up with a mediocre one while he's under the franchise.
He's had two really good years, and he's made two Pro Bowls, and he was one time a first-team All-Pro. In his second year, he had 16 and a half sacks. Wasn't overrated at that point, right? Had a big year. And then he fell off in 15 games the following year. He started 15 games, and he had 6.5 sacks. So he fell way off. And the year after that, he was hurt a lot, but he played in 11 games, started 6, and only had 2 sacks, and then he bounced back with 12.5 last year.
Mm-hmm.
So if you feel like he's hyped as well, and he might be a little bit overrated in that regard in terms of consistent productivity.
Sure.
I think that's fair to say, but I would take him. I would have loved to have seen the Jags sign Jason Pierre-Paul had he made it to the
Me
market
too.
In free agency this year. I thought it would have been a great get for them. Thank you for the call, Gary. Let's go to CJ up next this morning on 1010XL. Good morning, CJ.
Good morning, man. I think Andrew Luck is a little overrated, being in the fact that he had to play the dismal Jags for the most part of his career. I mean, and you got to think
that's,
about it.
But that's 2 games a year.
But you got to think about it, though. You got to look back at what he does against the Jaguars versus everybody else, and then it'll kind of put things in perspective. But also, too, I mean, not that he's not a great player, but Aaron Rodgers, I think he's a little – overrated as far as people calling him the best quarterback in the league, just because, I mean, every year this guy should be like basically in the championship game and winning Super Bowls. I mean, I don't see it, but I mean, I think Ben Roethlisberger is probably the best overall. So, I mean,
but wait, he's won half as many Super Bowls as Tom Brady. How
well,
can
listen,
that be based on your criteria?
The reason why I say Ben Roethlisberger, if you take him away from the, you got to ask yourself this. Take Ben Roethlisberger away from the Steelers. What would they do? Take Aaron Rodgers away from Green Bay. I think Green Bay would be a little better off. That's all I'm saying.
All right. Well, I mean, that's your prerogative, and there's no way to tell that.
We've seen the Steelers stay afloat without Ben Roethlisberger.
And we also
in
saw
years.
Matt Flynn come in and throw 6 touchdowns
right.
in relief of Aaron Rodgers.
That was one game.
I got it.
And there was nothing on the line for that team that year. We've seen Charlie Batch and Byron Leftwich keep that Steelers team afloat, you know, 2 and 3 years ago when they were without Ben Roethlisberger in games that meant something for the Pittsburgh Steelers. Now, that's not to say that I think Ben Roethlisberger is one of the handful of the best quarterbacks in the league. I really do. I don't think that he's an overrated guy, but I think he and Andrew Luck are on kind of the same kind of plane to me.
All right, bring up Andrew Luck's totals. I've got his game by game here, okay? And bring up like his season totals for his first 3 years in his career. How many first year in the league? How many touchdowns? How many interceptions?
23 and 18.
23 and 18. Okay, he was 2 and 2 versus the Jags in 2 games. 2 touchdowns, 2 picks. Okay, so is that some abnormally large percentage of his production coming against
Gabbert
Jacksonville?
Got him that year,
right? So he had one game against the Jags that year where he threw no touchdowns with 1 pick. Okay, second year in the league, touchdown, interception,
23 and 9.
He had, let's see, 2 and 1 and 1 and 0. He had 3 touchdowns and a pick against the Jags.
So he
seems about right on par
right.
with his per game output, right? I mean, 23 touchdowns in 16 games. He threw 3 and 2 games against the Jags. Seems right on par, not ahead of anything. Now, last year he had a 4 touchdown game against the Jags. You know what he did the next week? He threw 4 more against Tennessee.
Yeah.
You know what he did a few weeks later? He threw 4 against the Giants. You know what he ended up with? 40.
Yeah, 40 and 16.
40. So he had 5 touchdowns against the Jags last year and no interceptions. He had a great mark against them last year. It was a great mark against everybody last year. He threw 5 against Washington last year, right? I mean, so that's as many as he threw in 2 games against the Jaguars. He's not loading up on the Jags. He's loading up on the league.
Right. This is a guy who threw 40 touchdowns to lead the league in touchdown passes last year with T.Y. Hilton and a couple tight ends and Hakeem Nicks.
Yes.
Like, he did it with those guys.
And running backs. He dumped it off the running backs as well. Look, does he have help? Yeah, everybody gets help along the way. But everyone's allowed to have help. He led the league in touch. He's not putting up an abnormally large portion of his stats against the Jaguars and padding it because of that. That's a lie. It's a fallacy. And that's not a lie. It's just a misrepresentation of what's happening. Go look at the numbers. The numbers are what the numbers are.
For a guy who couldn't have had expectations any higher than they were, when they came into a league, for a guy like Andrew Luck, this was, you know, we knew for 2 years whenever he decided he was coming into the draft, he was going to be the number one overall pick to whoever the heck had that number one overall pick. Everyone was already talking about him as a potential Pro Bowl talent from the moment that he got in the league. How far could he go in his NFL career? For guys that have had that kind of pressure on them coming into the league, I think you've seen enough out of Andrew Luck to feel like those expectations weren't way out of whack for this guy.
I don't think they're at all out of whack.
He's playing up to that kind of reputation on the field. Like you said, he's won 11 games each of the first 3 years in the league. He's 86 touchdowns, 43 interceptions through 3 years. He was phenomenal last year, throwing for 4,800 yards and 40 touchdowns to lead the league, stepping into it. And, again, without a whole lot of premier talent on that offense around him, he's making these kind of things happen. You wonder what he would do if he had, say, the weapons that Peyton Manning has in Denver. I think you'd see similar numbers to what Peyton Manning has done in Denver.
For instance, he's got 83 touchdowns, right? He's thrown 8 against the Jags. Let's round it off and call that 1 out of 10 touchdowns that he's thrown has come against the Jags. We place the Jags 1 out of 8 games. Should have a higher percentage of touchdowns against the Jags,
right,
than he actually does if he was loading up against this team. He's pretty good, you know? Wish that wasn't the case, being that he plays in the AFC South. He's pretty good, and, you know.
I get it, though. If there's a bunch of fans in Jacksonville who want to say that Andrew Luck is overrated,
but
if you're going
to hold that argument based on he's loading up his stats against this team, go look at who he's loading up against. He's loading up against everybody, okay? He's putting them monster numbers.
He just happens to be really good.
He's really good. All right, we'll come back. We'll take a few more of your calls on the other side. Take a look at what came in on Twitter as well on the fan feedback spotlight. Who's the most overrated player in the National Football League? It is a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday here on 1010XL 92.5 FM. All right, down the stretch they come. Your Triple Crown Thoroughbreds of broadcasting. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony.
If you say so.
Tyler Devitt. Here we go.
Lord, don't let me twist an ankle.
Jaguars today. Oh, I'll shoot you right now. Tony, I've always referred to you as the glue of this program that holds us together. I'd like to prove that to you.
Good
one day.
Good gracious.
Wild West Guns of Gold, our Monday sponsor. Let's get a couple calls in here talking about the most overrated player in the National Football League. Who do you think it is? Ian is next up on Jaguars today. Good morning, Ian.
Hey, guys. You know, my take on it is a little different. This guy, I think, you know, nowadays he's probably one of the better corners in the league, but if I'm ranking him with the all-time greats, I don't think he stacks up, and that's Darrelle Revis. He just, you know, he shuts down his side of the field and all that, but he doesn't seem to make too many game-changing plays that the average fan sees, especially when you think back to a Deion Sanders-type corner who made plays on defense, made plays on special teams. And the few times you picked on his side, you truly did pay for it.
All right, that's fine. I will disagree with you, but I will say this. If you hold Deion as a standard to compare a cornerback to and his impact on the game,
right,
and you want to include what he did on special teams rolled into that, everyone's going to be coming up short.
It's difficult.
I don't know. You know,
this isn't an easy question to answer, really. Because,
it's not.
Because you're talking about where the perception of a player is, are there a bunch of players in the league where their perception is way beyond what they're doing on the field? I can't think of a bunch of those types of guys. And I certainly think Darrelle Revis, his impact on teams that are playing against Darrelle Revis is significant in that you do kind of, at times, with guys like Revis and Sherman and Patrick Peterson, you're almost taking a side of the field or a guy out of a route. I mean, it's, you ignore what that guy is doing to the point that they're not going to make a bunch of big plays in games because they're not given many opportunities to make plays at all.
Darrelle Revis, and he may not be as good as he was at the peak of his talents, but when he was at the peak of his talents, go look at what he did against number one wide receivers.
It was ridiculous.
It was crazy. The guys wouldn't bust 50 yards on him.
No.
In most games. It was nuts. So I disagree with you, but if Deion's a standard, then pretty much every cornerback is overrated.
Yeah, if you're talking about comparing a guy to the greats of all time,
right,
then that's a different
Although
discussion.
I think Darrelle Revis, if you're the best of this era, and he's been considered probably the best or among the two or three best at worst at any point where he's been healthy of this era, you should be inching into greats of all time conversation. There's a different lines of demarcation. You can be one of the top 25 basketball players of all time. you're nowhere close to Michael Jordan.
Right.
I mean, you know, it could be a situation like that. Deion was that good. But regardless, let's move on. Let's get Mike in here next before we take a look at the tweets. Hello, Mike. How are you?
Hey, man. How's it going?
Good.
All right. My my overrated player would be Richard Sherman, just because, and I totally disagree with the last caller. I think Darrell Revis is if not as best, as good as Deion Sanders, you know what I mean? Just because how he plays the game. You can't, any right receiver you put against him in his prime, he went, you know, he went hard, man. But Richard Sherman, just because he's way overhyped. I think he gets a lot of exposure just because of his, like, TV and his tweets and stuff like that.
We've actually, thank you, Mike, for the call. We've actually had a lot of people suggest Richard Sherman today. I think Richard Sherman's among the best players at his position, but, you know, you've got that debate. He doesn't follow the top guy, so is he being protected by his defense? Maybe to some degree, but I'll say this, in terms of the top guys and you avoid throwing at him, mm-hmm. he still comes up with a pretty high percentage of interceptions for balls thrown his way. You
no,
know
he
what
does.
I mean?
And my whole thing with the he doesn't cover the top guy, I get that. Like Patrick Peterson, Darrell Revis, they're following the top guy around the field. Well, it also means that you can put the top guy where he doesn't have to go up against Richard Sherman. And guess what? You're still not eating on that defense. It's an incredible defensive array of talent that Seattle has put together. And look, when you see a guy like Aaron Rodgers in that first game of last year where he's not even looking, when he drops back into the pocket, he doesn't even look to the right side of the field because he knows that's where Richard Sherman is, and what's the point of even trying that guy if I don't have to?
Yeah, but that's because we've already heard this morning
right.
that Aaron Rodgers is overrated.
Right. Well, he might be, but then it costs you an opportunity to win a game because you're not using one side of the field offensively. And I think that you can talk about how good a player is if he is taking away a side of the field out of a read from an opposing quarterback that
all
quickly.
Right. Let's get to the tweets, Tony. What kind of feedback we get on this one?
Here's what we got from Cristiano, because he still has a roster spot, Blaine Gabbert from Herald, defensive end Michael Bennett. In 2 years, people will realize that the Jaguars have the better Michael Bennett. From Chris, sounds crazy, but Russell Wilson, hashtag my sorry.
I like the hashtag. Some people think that, though, of Russell Wilson.
They do. From Brandon, Clay Matthews. From Will, DeMarco Murray. From Nick, Peyton Manning, only has won one Super Bowl in his career. Got to do more with the talent he's had. Hashtag good, not great. From Eric, Cam Newton, what has he really done to deserve that contract? Not as good as he thinks he is. From Duval Doom, do I even need to read it? Do I even need to answer? It's Captain QB falls down. I get credit for a sack.
I like the picture you sent up with J.J. Watt.
From Christoph, Aaron Rodgers, for being the best quarterback in the league, he doesn't have a lot of comeback victories. From Demetrius, Sam Bradford, I don't see how St. Louis got a second and a fourth for a quarterback who hasn't shown ability. And from Black Dog, Jay Cutler, if overrated equates to overpaid, he's my choice, and there's a strong argument for that.
That is a very good argument for that. Here's some more on the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line. Richard Sherman's the product of Seattle system. You could almost throw the entire Legion of Boom in there. Okay. This one, Tom Brady's overrated. I admit to being a hater, but you cheat for one reason. You feel you need an advantage. He is a cheater. That's not me. That's the texter saying that. Here's one saying Jameis Winston. I hadn't played it down yet in the National Football League. How do you know?
What's he rated?
Most overrated. I don't know. And this one, we've had DeMarco Murray's been mentioned several times, okay, in the tweets, Facebook, what have you. DeMarco Murray, this one on the text line, most overrated. Anyone could have run behind that Dallas line. I thought Mike Irvin just put it in crystal clear brilliance, really, a couple of weeks ago. If that's the case, then why'd they feel the need to give it to him 400 times? If anyone can do it.
Right.
Why didn't they give Joseph Randle 100 of those and try to make sure Murray was healthy for the postseason, right? He turned out to be, he was fine. But if anyone can do it, then why did he have to get 400 carries last year? Clearly anyone, just anyone can't do it. And I realize Randle averaged like over 6 yards a carry last year. But how much of that was DeMarco Murray wears down the defense, and you come in the fourth quarter and you rip a long run
sure.
off.
If depends on where you're rating DeMarco Murray. I don't think he's the best running back in football.
Agreed.
And if that's where people are rating DeMarco Murray, then yeah, you can make an argument for him being an overrated player, but I certainly think he's in the top handful of running backs in the league right now.
All right, couple last ones here from Facebook. Adrian Jackson says, I'd have to say anyone who personally feels the need to cheat repeatedly in order to play at a high level is setting themselves out as overrated, mentioning no Brady's in particular. Hashtag just saying. From Joe Hines, Andrew Luck came into the league overhyped and will have to walk on water to meet the projections. Unfortunately, he's still a very good QB that the Jags will have to deal with for the next 10 years or so. We discussed him at length. And here's one from Josh Wigan. Sizzling hot. This take may burn your ears. Zane Beatles.
Ooh.
Pro Football Focus rated him as one of the worst guards in the league, and that's still too high of a rating, says Josh. Only reason he should be on the Jaguars' payroll is as a replacement for the faulty turnstile at gate four. Tony. Woo. All right. So, yeah, I guess that kind of goes in line with the one we got from Cristiano. Blaine Gabbert's on a roster, therefore he's overrated. Some NFL team thinks he's worthy of a roster spot, and that is way too much.
Blaine's sticking it out in San Francisco.
Hey, wouldn't you?
Everyone else is retiring.
Blaine's still there. Hey, coach, about me?
It's just nobody wants to start for the 49ers.
No, I mean, I want to sit back and be the backup quarterback and collect paychecks too.
Heck yeah.
I haven't been offered that, but
nor have I.
I'm open to that suggestion. You're the glue guy here.
Just get me on the opening day roster.
We got big plans for you, glue guy.
That's right. Get me on that opening day roster. I'll take my pay.
All right. Let's wrap it up by thanking Wild West Guns and Gold, our Monday sponsor here, Johnny O from Jaguars.com, John Osier, for popping in with an OTA report. Jags just off the practice field. More on them throughout the week, certainly right here on Jaguars Today. So for Tyler Devitt, for Joe Fortunato, for Fat Tony, I'm Mike Dempsey.